This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From Space City, USA, Paul Bosch presents Wrestling Spectacular, matching the world's top wrestlers in fierce competition.
Welcome to Space City, an NWA on-demand podcast. I'm Pete. I'm with Johnny. Johnny, how you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good. A little bit of a stressful day, but looking forward to the two things brightened my day. At the end of the day, that Milo guy is done, and that made me happy. And getting to do this show.
There you go. Yeah, I went to an indie show yesterday called Wrestle Circus. They had their first iPay-per-view. And I got a lot of compliments on my Terry Funk shirt.
Ooh.
Because, you know, the old school shirts always stand out at indie shows. And one of the refs was wearing in honor of Chavo Guerrero, he had the old Chavo Guerrero, death band in memoriam on when he was refereeing and stuff. I thought that was a nice touch of Houston wrestling and stuff.
That's cool. Yeah, yeah. I didn't even, but especially, duh, you're in Houston, of course.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was in Austin, actually, but it's still, you know.
Close enough.
Yeah, exactly, you know, and he's an older referee, so, I mean, I probably wouldn't be surprised if he somehow knew Chavo or reffed a match with Chavo or his son or something to that effect.
Loaned him money.
Yeah, I mean, geez, right? We've had so many.
I say that in all due respect to the great man, okay, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a lot of deaths in this last week with Chavo and George Animal Steel, and our man Ivan. It just feels like there's just too many to talk about. But we're gonna talk about Ivan a little bit just because of they uploaded a promo in respect to Ivan. I don't think George Steel, he was mainly a New York guy, so I don't think he ever worked Houston. And if he did, it was just like a little piece of it. But Ivan had worked at Houston quite a bit, and they've uploaded a couple matches, one with Tony Atlas, and another was the coffin match with Dusty, and actually it was just really weird. They had a little round table with Steve Corino, Baby Doll, Kevin Sullivan, and Ivan talking about some Dusty Rhodes memories. And the first thing, I've only watched the first like 15 minutes of it or so, it's on the High Spot streaming service, but Ivan talks about his match, the first ever coffin match in Houston.
Oh, neat.
And how it was really Dusty's idea, all based on the angle, which was what Ivan was doing, was he had this red shovel and was burying his opponents after matches with the red shovel.
Which is a callback to the 60s and Khrushchev screaming, "We will bury you."
Yep. Dusty built the whole angle and the blow off with the coffin match, and which both of us have seen that match. It was a lot of fun, and I thought the whole entire shovel, the red shovel, I thought was a really neat touch, and I really liked that booking idea. I thought it added a lot. I mean, added like a different layer, not a different layer, but added a layer to Koloff, and I thought it was really neat. And I'm like for us, like on Titans, we watched a couple of his matches, and like he's one of the guys who's, there's not a ton of footage on him early, you know, a lot late in his career, like, you know, when his last big run with Nikita and Crusher Khrushchev versus the Rock and Roll Express, and then a little later on. But I mean, that guy, I mean, from all the footage that's there, the guy was a ring general, incredible worker. He was a guy who could actually morph his body type, like from, he could be the Monster Russian, the Face Bruno, or he could go into the Carolinas and drop weight and work in a more go-go-go type of territory where it was more based on work than on characters, like in the WWF. He had one of Bob's first really strong, great matches in the WWF. Remember that one we watched on Titans
of
Wrestling?
Great.
Incredible match. And he's a guy who I'm a wrestling observer, a Hall of Fame voter, and the fact that he finally got in there, I thought was really cool. Even though we all know he really, one of his life goals was to be in the WWE Hall of Fame, and it's a shame Vince didn't bring him in. It would have been nice if they probably brought him in when the year put Bruno in as one of Bruno's all-time drawing opponents and friend. What type of thought memories do you have of Ivan and stuff?
Well, a lot of it's related to this when we talk about this actual promo. Mine was, I was aware of the name maybe from the magazines, or possibly the first time I ever saw him was actually on Crockett. I mean, that easily could have been. It was right at the time where Mike exploded into watching and getting the magazines. And I always, I loved that. And here's what people remember that so fondly, is because that was such a super hot period for Crockett, you know, from like 84 to 87, let's say, you know, and things started to dip. And a big part of every show was the Russians.
Yep.
You know, and they were, I mean, you had your factions almost, you know, and who were the power factions of the territory, and the Russians were up there with everybody else. It's like the other bad guys didn't fuck with the Russians, and the Russians generally didn't team with the other bad guys, though. They just stuck together, and he was always he was the voice, because Nikita was awesome and cool, but Nikita's whole thing was like he barely could speak English. Nikita, and Crusher, when he would talk, we always thought it was the funniest thing. Because he's this huge, bulking, giant man, and he had that high-pitched
voice.
And he was like, "Road Warriors, Warriors of the Road, we will defeat you." And we always laughed. And then you got Ivan, and he's the real voice of this, because he's under orders from the Kremlin, which we'll talk about in this promo, which just blew my mind. And to prove that Russian superior athlete, and you know this is true, David Crockett. And I loved him, and he put over the menace of this faction, and then you got Nikita behind him, and I just fucking I loved them.
I'm on the Death Valley Driver 80s committee, and right now Zellner and I are working on the Crockett set. And one of the suggestions I did for extras was, you got to have a whole disc of the Russian promos. And, you know, they're not like dynamic, you know, they're not like a Flair promo or a Jerry Lawler promo, but they were a great character promo, you know what I'm saying? Where they were, you know, they got across. Were they going to, wow you, like a Cornette, entertain you like that? No, but what they did was their promo work was all built into their character, and they intertwined with one another. And I thought it was, I thought, man, yeah, you need to have a whole disc of the Russian promos, just because they're awesome.
But I would say that Ivan, though, is just as good as anybody, because he's not really Russian. He does that accent fucking perfectly.
Yeah.
And he's so convincing, and he's making points and explaining why they're doing what they're doing, and you know, but whatever. And I thought back to something I finally saw. I might have even seen it at the time. It was when I really wasn't watching, except every now and then. And I saw that Ivan Koloff had turned babyface.
Yep.
And against Paul Jones. And they had this promo. It was like, "Paul Jones, I've always known that you are evil, man. But I just ignored it, and I can't ignore it anymore." And I was like, and then you got Nikita going, "I've always known and said that my uncle deep down was a good man." And I was like, yeah, it was the best old man turning babyface at the end of his career deal ever.
Yeah, it was too bad he was set up against this shitty Russian assassin.
The matches and everything was...
Yeah, and then his partner was over the hill, 1989, I think it was.
Junkyard
Dog and stuff. And yeah. I think Michael Hayes might have been a partner for a bit.
But as far as the promo goes for the face turn, it's fantastic.
I know, I agree.
Because he makes it clear that, you know, he's only been following orders his whole career, you know?
Yeah, and then he finally realizes that he's going to go against it, and he has
because this man is truly, because Paul Jones, of all people, I've always said it, you know?
Yeah. But
the man was true evil.
Yep.
that's why I wanted to see him, Jimmy Valiant, kill him, you know, and then Ivan figured it out too.
Yeah, and what's the other thing? And it was kind of cool when you also think about it. Like, Ivan, when he was feuding with Bruno, he was like the Nikita Koloff. He was the alpha. And then years later, to extend his career, he went into the secondary, more like the... I don't want to call him a manager, because that's just an insult to him, because he was working so hard and laying out these matches. But he kind of moved into the more of the elderly role or the secondary role and put the spotlight on Nikita. But he was instrumental doing the promos. I mean, especially in the Magnum TA feud, yeah. He was the one who carried the promo side for the Russians on that feud and stuff. And he's a cog in that wheel where they don't really remember much. And I hear he was the one I hear was calling the matches a lot from outside the ring.
Exactly. I was just about to add that, because apparently the reason those matches were so good, outside of the fact that Magnum was awesome, Nikita was limited but energetic and fun to watch, was that it was Ivan Koloff at ringside just masterminding it.
Yep. I even asked him in an interview, like, we interviewed him on Titans of Wrestling, mm-hmm. and that was one of the questions I asked him, was how instrumental was he on calling the matches. And
so that's probably where I heard that story.
Yeah, okay, probably was. Your genius partner here. But hey, man, really swell guy, and when we interviewed him, he was so warm, and he gave us so much time on that interview. I mean, you don't hear guys going on with guys you've never met, and he gave us almost like 2 hours of his time.
telling
stories, and it was a 5-star interview. I mean, it was one, I think, by far. I mean, it was our first interview we ever did with a wrestler, and I thought it was an incredible interview. And if you really guys want to know more about Ivan Koloff and the life and times of Ivan Koloff, from his wrestling to his battle with alcoholism, all his different times in different territories, even when he first, before he was Ivan Koloff, when he was Red McNulty in the Maritimes, it's a great interview on the history of Ivan Koloff. And if you guys have time, I'll try to link it, so people might want to go back and listen to that that interview. But speaking of interviews, why don't you tell us about this one that they uploaded on NWA On Demand?
Okay, first of all, he's got there with Paul Bosch, and he's in his fucking, that cape I love so much.
Yeah, with the, like, Dracula in a way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's almost like from a devil costume.
Yeah.
And I love looking back, the NWA logo, because it's from Houston Wrestling, Space City. It's the Earth and Space and the NWA. On top of that, he has his own NWA logo. Or that was the old NWA logo, but Fitz Houston.
Right.
But he basically gets to it, why he's there. They mention his success in New York. That he beat Bruno. And he's there to explain why he's there. And he's like, Mr. Paul Bosch, I have orders. And I must complete my orders. Because if I have to go back, I will have to face the consequences. And it made you, me at least, feel sympathetic to him. Because he's like, yeah, we've heard how awful it is over there. This poor guy, he'd probably have his family at gunpoint or some shit. He better succeed. Communism's terrible. And he didn't seem like he was eager to carry out his mission. He just had to. And it was a neat touch. And then he starts going on about the Olympics. He's like, well, we're a superior athlete. Who wins all gold medals at the Olympics? And Paul Bosch goes, America. And you just piss off Paul Bosch, you know, and he just sort of like cuts it off and get out of here. And he takes off and he says, he comes from a big country. Now he's here in a big state. I was like, yep. Okay. But it was hilarious. It's almost like he sensed that he was coming off sympathetic, so he turned it around and like decided to shit on America. But short and a perfect example of what a great fucking promo he is.
Yeah, now, how much equity or how much... I mean, that guy got more out of the Bruno win than I think anybody... I mean, that thing is, like, mentioned. But I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it's on his freaking tombstone.
Oh,
I mean, that guy... I mean, the I mean, beating Bruno is such a huge feather in his cap. And, I mean, you know, I mean, that thing was even mentioned all the way up to, like, into the late 80s during his career. Yeah, the man who beat Bruno Sammartino.
You know, I don't recall them bringing it up on Crockett TV.
Well, they did it here and there, but it just wasn't a religious type of thing. I mean, it wasn't as heavy-handed as it was here, where, I mean, they clearly, because it was only, I mean, they were still making a big deal of it, and it really helped his aura of being this destroyer, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, totally. And the Houston audience would be aware of Bruno, as yeah. opposed to other NWA territories where they didn't really know who he was because they never saw him.
Yeah, and Bruno did work Houston
yeah.
a few times and stuff like that. And so it definitely made it happen and stuff in a way. But let's get on to the first match, and it's a Bull Ramos versus Ivan Putski from January 2nd, 1981. What were your thoughts here?
let's see. Your referee Juan Reynosa. You know, I haven't seen him before. I like him. Putski does this fucking shit where at the beginning of the match they're looking to lock up, and he's bouncing his pecs.
Yeah,
at him as a because that's threatening, and then does a little wiggle, and it's just terrible. Sorry, and you know me, I was like, I have fond memories of Ivan Putski as a child, but the more you watch,
the more limited he is. Yeah,
and the more there's just something about him. Just like I'm not finding him charming like I did when I was 12. You know, for some reason, I'm not finding this charming anymore. with his stupid midget legs, he's just weird to look at. Bull, on the other hand, looks like the ugliest scrunchie of all time. you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He looks like a really ugly woman. and he's not very good either. Although, while I was writing this down, and I was really like, oh, God, yeah, Putski, I got to be honest about this. He hits the fucking Polish hammer, and I'm like, Polish hammer still kicks ass, though. I always love there's just the idea of just a big, strong guy just boom, right in the chest. It always came off as a super legit move to me. Like, he could have broken his sternum, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, like, right now, in the role here, Bull Ramos is kind of in the role of, like, the Baron or Dominic DiNucci, who at one point, you know, like, early in their career in the WWF here in Houston, Bull Ramos was a big name. And now this is towards the twilight of his – and now here's, the twilight of his career. Mm. So, I mean, it still means something when Putski beats him in a squash. And it's kind of like Dominic would put over like a lot of the big time baby faces on the TV. And this is kind of what Ramos's role was. This is just a Putski squash. And I like from Ramos we've seen, I've kind of liked. Reminds me a little bit of Jerry Blackwell in a way. And might be just, I'm not even thinking about the singlet, but he's a pretty big, athletic big guy. It was a very popular wrestler in Houston. But yeah, the Polish Hammer gets the win, and then we get the Putski promo, and he's
Before we get that, the Paul Bosch, he's getting in the ring for the promo, and on the house mic in front of him, he goes, "And he's a real solid Polak." Ivan, and I'm like, "What the fuck?" I'm like, I honestly think he didn't know that's an insult.
Right.
I don't think he would. I mean, he'd have to be like the, what is he, Archie Bunker? You know, come on. I don't think he thinks that's an insult. That's my only explanation.
I think you're right. I mean, again, you know, it's the 80s. It's a different time frame. And
he refuses to call tags touches. I mean, or touches tags. You know, he's got his way he talks, and I just don't
now
think
he did call it a tag in one of these matches later on.
Once. I caught it. I'm like, he said tag. Oh my god. But then the other thing with this, he does say to Ivan, or Ivan does his promo, which is okay, and he goes, "Could you wish us a happy new year in Polish?"
Yeah.
Sure thing, Mr. Bosch. And he's one of those definite, Mr. Bosch, you are the best, and I'm proud to work for you. That whole thing. You know, you can tell there's probably a lot of truth to that statement. And I just came from the McMahons. I'm back. I'm happy to be back here with you. And then he talks for like 2 minutes. I was like, is that how long it takes to say Happy New Year, Houston, in Polish? This is taking forever.
I know, right? Jesus. All right, man. Let's get off of that match. No need any more of that. And then we go another January 2nd, 1981. And let's look at this card, okay? We have it. Everything has been uploaded onto the site, so the whole entire card is there. This is the first card of the year, and it's all – this is where they transitioned into using Southwest Championship Wrestling talent. And – my God, on paper, this card looks terrible. It was drawn by two things, and we have, like, okay, we're going to be looking at the Bugsy McGraw, Relapongo Leon match. There's Wahoo versus Gary Young. We're going to be talking about the Ernie Ladd, Tom Jones match. We're going to be talking about Scott Casey and Gino. We've seen Tully versus Don Diamond. We just talked about Ivan and Bull Ramos. We had the Big Un versus the Twin Devil. We have this six-man that was uploaded with Tiger Conway Jr., Chavo, Dr. Tom versus Red Dog Lane, Eddie Mansfield, and Twin Devil number two. We had Andre the Giant going over Tank Patton, and then we had a 2-2-ring battle royal. That's a stinker of a card, and to start the new year out, but it looks like it was all drawn by Andre in the Battle Royal, I would assume.
Oh, totally. Oh, of course it was. I mean, because you'd be like, okay, I'm changing up talent here.
Yeah.
Okay? It's the beginning of the new year. We're going to put all this out here. And we've seen all this stuff. And there was stuff that was kind of entertaining.
Yeah, I liked Andre and Tank Patton, tell you the truth.
Yeah.
The Battle Royal was fine, yeah.
I think I liked that six-man.
Yeah, I enjoyed the six-man. I liked Tully and Don Diamond, too. I thought it was pretty solid.
But anyway, yeah. But to introduce all that talent, his loyal fans, he knows, and to draw, even, because you could be the loyal fan as you want. If you look at a card and go, who the fuck are these guys?
Yeah.
You may go, hey, maybe let's go see the Globetrotters instead, honey. Yeah, you know, and, but, oh, wait, Andre the Giant and a Battle Royal? And we all know, at that time, that was guaranteed fucking big money draw.
Yeah, and
a
Houston
battle
was
royal
a,
with
yeah,
Andre.
And every at the end, and also was a Houston tradition. The first week of the year was the 2-ring battle royal. I mean, I opened up
that
every.
Too.
That was a Houston tradition and stuff. But yeah,
so that's okay. So you got the tradition drawing it. You got people who want to come out and see fucking Andre the Giant in a battle royal.
Yeah,
because that was a known draw, you know. So and in a double ring battle royal at that.
Yeah. So, yeah, that definitely drew the card. But, yeah, this was a stink of a card, and the matches really weren't that interesting. But let's talk about Bugsy and Relapongo Leon. I did not like this match.
No.
Yeah, shocking. There was some grappling early. I actually liked Relapongo Leon here, where I think if like him and like Chavo wrestled, I think they could legitimately, if they give him 12 minutes, could have a you know really good match, because I thought Leon was pretty good on the mat and had some fun counters and stuff. But Bugsy, I have no time for. He's a great character. Cool. I like him as a babyface. Here's a heel, so it just totally wasn't working for me. They worked a lot of King of the Mountain spots, which is, to me, lazy wrestling a lot of times. It's time-killing spots. Yeah, but this is definitely your go get some damn popcorn and a Coke match. And then Scott Casey makes the save for Leon.
All right.
Fired up babyface Scott Casey. You know, what about you? What do you think of this thing?
Okay. My grandfather once actually had a terrible case of relumpago.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, come on.
The crowd turns on Johnny. Heel turn on him with that bad joke. I hope he didn't think long to think of that joke.
It took me all of 20 seconds, but I stand by that joke. But anyway, I've never heard of this guy. Again, another one of those names that comes up every now and then where I go, have you ever heard of this guy? You'd remember that name.
Yeah.
Okay? That's not a name you're like, I know that. And I was surprised at first when he starts doing some, like, we kip ups and stuff. But there was just something about his look and the way he did it. It always felt like he was, like, a magician going, like, ta-da!
Yeah.
It was throwing me. And Bugsy, I'm going to explain my Bugsy love. Number one, he was weird. He's a heel here. He's also jacked here, which was not the image of Bugsy McGraw I grew up with.
Right.
He was fat. You know, he's all fucking jacked here, and he's a big dumb monster. And I love his name is Bugsy, because I know that means crazy, but also tough gangsters were called Bugsy. So that appealed to me. But what appealed to me was I loved Bugsy McGraw and had never seen a Bugsy McGraw match. I loved him purely because of the magazines. He was one of my favorite magazine characters that I'm never going to see this guy. I love reading every now and then about him. I love the fucking aviator goggles and shit. He reminded me of the Donald Sutherland in that Kelly's Heroes.
Okay, I can buy that. Yeah, and I mean, don't get me wrong. I like McGraw as a character. I just don't want us to watch him wrestle. I like to see him, like, I loved him in World Class, where he'd be at the freaking, well, they had, it used to be on the opening for a bit, was he's at the water slide, the water slide, you know? I loved About Town, doing those type of things with him. I mean, character pieces he was great in and stuff. Yeah, I just didn't care for him as a worker.
Oh, no, he sucked, dude. I'm not defending, I mean, he was... And he seemed like, I'm like, that's an old man.
Yeah.
This is an old man doing this. Someone get that old man out of the ring. But here he's looking. And there's something about jacked up Bugsy McGraw that's kind of terrifying. I'm like, because I never grew up with that Bugsy. This guy looks like he might actually hurt you. And there's a lot of clobbering and shit. And I did like Scott Casey to the rescue. They're just it was fired up. I love it. He gets on the fucking mic, and he does the whole. He's like, "Oh, you want to pick on somebody? Why don't you pick on me?" And his delivery was awesome. I loved it, and I was just like, "Yeah, fucking Scott Casey's gonna kick some ass." And I usually hate fucking cowboys coming in and being good guys. But it was cool here. And he takes his fucking boot off, because he's gonna beat the fuck out of that asshole. And Bugsy tries to come around he goes to the other ring. He's like, "Oh, come on, come to this ring." And first Scott Casey's like, "What?" And he goes, "You know what? Fuck you." And does. And just comes through. He's like, "You know, you want me to come over there to kick your ass? Sure." And then Bugsy fucking takes a powder. And it was the best part of this match.
I know. I'm with you on that. On that note, why don't we take a break? And we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation, Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceOfNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceOfNation.com, the only place to be in your...
And we are back. And we're back, and we're still back on January 2nd, 1981. And we actually, where Casey comes in for the save, he goes right into a match with Gino now as his opponent. And Casey's still standing in the ring. And I was talking to Matt, our friend Matt D of the show, and... this felt like a really hot studio match because it was like 9 minutes, but it felt weird I didn't feel weird for say in a arena setting, but it felt more like it was like a hot angle or match on off of like a Crockett television or something. But it still worked here. I think it would have worked better in like in a studio setting, but I still enjoyed it. Gino attacks and it's all action. And then Gino's slowing down the pace and. He's working the back and the neck, and it's turned into a real back and forth, like sprint. They're cutting a really good pace, and I love Gino trying to slow it down, and he wants to shake Scott Casey's hand, but Casey does, is like, fuck you, and stomps his hand. And but we get this pretty crappy finish, but it leads to like a little fun post-match, a little angle to get some more heat into it, into the feud, and... I thought it was like a 3-star match. I thought it was really good. And again, you know, usually, you know, Gino has just been excellent on the footage. And this is just another, like, just a great Gino performance. And he's even able to make Scott Casey look like an interesting babyface. Even though he's, you know, he's pretty bland as a babyface. I mean, he had a decent body, threw a decent punch. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it was Gino just pretty much carrying the action. And there's all the little things, like Casey stomping on the hand. It was a nice little payoff. And there was a lot of stooge spots that Gino would set up. And then the payoff on him. Overall, really fun stuff. What I really loved was what came next, which was the big Ernie Ladd. And he's in a cowboy hat and cowboy boots and a jacket, sports coat, looking like, you know, he's looking like the Ernie Ladd of, you know, he's a freaking ex-Houston Oiler, love you, Blue. And him and Bosch, Ladd saying he doesn't want to wrestle, he doesn't want to fight this jabroni Tom Jones. He's too good for that. He's a main eventer. And Ladd in this angle just comes across as really like the most. I think Ladd might be the best ever at like getting himself over in a promo and making himself seem so more important than the rest of the roster. He just has an arrogance and a cadence about him that you believe everything he says, and he was just fantastic here, and Bosch was just so angry and defiant, yelling at him the whole entire time to get in the ring, and he's threatening to slap Paul Bosch, and it got really heated between the two, but finally he ends up sucker punching Tom Jones and just drops the big double legs on him and lays him out, all in his cowboy hat and jacket and sports coat and stuff, and he gets the 1-2-3. It was a really great segment, and these Ernie Ladd segments I can watch all day. He's like the master of getting angles over and segments over, and this was no exception to the rule, man. Just really interesting stuff, man.
Okay, and here's the thing about Ernie Ladd, and I apologize. I this slipped by me, and I'm going to watch this immediately after the show because that sounds like the greatest thing ever.
It's awesome. It's awesome.
That sounds like the greatest fucking thing ever. And why Ernie Ladd, why us watching Ernie Ladd, we almost kind of like, we love him. You know, like, yeah, man, Ernie Ladd's cool as fuck, but he was hated so bad because he was the only guy to deftly do fuck you, white man.
Yep.
You know, and as we saw it when he talked to Vince McMahon, Jr.
Yep.
In WWE, he goes, "Oh, you just love it if you do. Well, you want to do something about Mr. Nelson, man? Yeah, yeah. You know, just because he's a fucking giant and he's smart. You know, yep. and he don't take any shit, and he is just as good. He's better than everyone else. He's the best in the goddamn world." You know, and he takes no shit, and he isn't here to fucking kiss the white man's ass. We see that now, like, that's fucking cool. Back then, that got fucking heat. But he did it without ever really going into, like, hey, honky, or anything like that. It was all implied, and he left it to the prejudices of the audience that he knew how to manipulate. That's why I'm sure him and Paul Bosch backstage were just like, that was great.
Yep.
Because he was so what he because backstage, you know, he respected all these old timers, and he was treated with respect by all those old timers.
Yep. I mean, I agree. It was a great segment. You really need to check it out. The next up, we got the dynamic duo of Gino Hernandez and Tully Blanchard versus Mil Máscaras and Manny Fernandez from September 18th, 1981. And this is the first match that we've seen from this card. And let's look at this card here.
All right.
Let's see what's all on there. See what we might be having coming down. I always like me and Matt D, we will message each other because we really like looking at what we might be coming up with on what might be showing up eventually. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But let's see here. I'm pulling it up right now, and this is...
See, we're dropping his name because we're trying to pull the very, very hermit-like Matt D onto a special podcast appearance.
Yep.
So we're trying to butter him up a little.
Yeah, here we go. We have there's a Tiger Conway Jr. versus Dr. Tom Pritchard match, which could be fun.
Yeah.
Tank Patton versus Bobby Duncombe. That could be a Hoss fight. Could be interesting. I don't know. Buck Robley versus Scott Casey. JYD versus Dick Slater.
Ooh.
Scott Casey, Tiger Conway Jr., Bobby Duncan versus Kelly Kaninsky, Tank Patton, Buck Robley. We got the dynamic duo match, and then we get a Brody Patera match. So, you know, there's some interesting stuff there. But
yeah.
Is there any? I think the match I'd most want to see might be JYD and Slater, maybe.
Oh, totally. Yeah. All that sounds like a lot of fun. Like, ooh, a young Tom Pritchard versus a Tiger Conway Jr., if, you know, who's been proven, and we're going to talk about it in a bit, that he's really good. But, of course, a Junkyard Dog versus Dick Slater at this point in their careers? Fuck yeah.
Yeah, in 82? Yeah, in 81? Hell yeah. Well, what do you think of this match? The Dime of the Duo versus Mill and Manny?
I loved it. Not all of it, but loved most of it. I just don't like Mil Máscaras. That's a thing, you know that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you, but in the Houston footage, I'll go on the record, and he's looked a lot better in Houston.
I agree.
Than he did 100%. In New York or in most other places, I will say.
I agree 100%, but and I know that's such a preconceived thing, but I mean, it was fine here. But by the way, I was like, when you were announcing what match was next. And you started with Dynamic Duo. I'm like, come on, buddy. The main event's got to be the one with JYD, right?
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay, good, good, good. Manny is fucking awesome in this. Stick with that. And when they first pulled back and I saw he was wearing green, white, and red trunks, instantly my mind was like, why is he? He's not Italian. Because I'm Italian, you know.
Oh,
like, oh right,
God,
buddy,
really?
Mexico.
Oh wow. Okay.
No. It was. I mean, it was literally a split second in my head, and then I'm like, oh, duh. You know. But it shows you where you're raised. You know, it affects when you see certain flag colors.
Right.
So for a second, I'm like, well, what kind of gimmicks he running? But But he's what Paul called the Mexican Connection.
Is that what he called him? Okay.
Something like that. And I, what I love about the dynamic duo, and this is a point I want to make, because the dynamic duo, as I knew them, were Gino and Chris Adams.
Yep.
And I always liked them. I mean, I liked, and so did a lot of people. They were starting to get over as baby faces. And then I read about this original dynamic duo, but still, to me, I'd be like, yeah, well, they couldn't. I mean, Tully's awesome and all, but it couldn't have been as good as Gino and Chris. Fuck no, they're way better than Gino and Chris were.
Yeah, their timing is better.
It's timing. And that's
their
what I was just about to get at.
Is better. They're better at making their opponents look better, you know?
And timing is exactly what I'm saying, because the baby faces are on the offense and on the offense and on the offense. And as soon as there's a slight opportunity for them to get a double team in, it comes up, they swarm like bees. Double team it, and then goes. Then the other one gets pushed out of the ring by the ref, and they're now on the offense. And I was like, that's my favorite heel team thing, and they do it to perfection. They're so good. Oh, wait, Tully's got I think Mill in a hold, and Gino starts. He's almost like doing the Santino fucking trombone going up and down the apron, taunting the fans, like, look at this, da 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 da. And he's just, that crowd is in the palm of his hands. And, that's such an amazing. That's when I can see one guy down there control a crowd. To me, that's just the most impressive thing, and he just got it.
Oh, Gino was, I thought, was aces in this match.
Oh,
I mean,
he was so much fun.
He was so much fun, yep.
Oh, and then bumping around, exactly. Them bumping around, stooging around, but they're also really fucking good.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what they do, if they hug each other on the outside, which I always love.
Yep,
and Paul's like, Paul's implying that they're, you know, isn't that cute?
Their offense, none of the offense is flashy. It's all about getting heat. It's all about eye gouging or
elbows,
cheap shots or elbows.
Well, that's just it. Their legal moves are all stuff that makes you go, oh, fucking asshole. Just fucking elbows right to the chest. Like, wow, fuck you. While you got Mil Máscara spinning around on his ass. You know, now granted, when you got Manny in there, then it's a fucking fight. You know, and they seeing Gino, Tully, and Manny at this point in their career, you know, 81, you say?
Yeah.
Just young and fucking tearing the house down is so much fun for those of us who saw them on Crockett, and they were great on Crockett, but see them a few years earlier when they had a little more pep in their step, and is amazing. But then let's just get to the finish. Is Mill gets crotched on his prodigious package, you know, and gets pinned.
Does the job. Does it unheard of. Unheard of. It doesn't happen often.
Yeah, and at first I was like, I don't fucking believe that fucking happened. And for a split second I was thinking, maybe all those stories are just maybe lots of exaggeration. And then he fucking comes out for a promo with Paul Bosch, and this motherfucker is crying like a baby.
But he's emoting. He's emoting like a motherfucker.
Yeah, but crying. I was like, there's no crying in wrestling.
I know. I was like a little taken aback, but I thought it was impressive just because you could tell that he was emoting so much behind a fucking mask.
Oh, yeah, that was it. But when he was emoting, was pathetic. And then at the end, he sort of gets fired up about he's so angry. And then I'm like, oh, that was okay. But the majority of it, he's weeping.
Yeah,
and then
no, he does.
Sorry, Mr. Bosch. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. And Bosch is just like, it's okay. No one understood it. he's like, there. It's okay. Calm down. And I was just like, oh, I just don't like Mil Máscara. But in the ring, yeah, he was perfectly fine here. Perfectly fine.
Yeah, and this led to like an October 2nd a match.
Yes,
which
Karras?
Yeah, brought Dos in, which we've seen. And that's when they released that match. And that's a great match, too. Watching the dynamic duo now on this footage, I think we've seen about 10, or I have at least seen about 10 of their matches. I would put them up there as one of the best tag teams around. I mean, I don't have them on the level like the Midnight Express or the Rock and Roll Express, but I think they're at the level like the Fantastics and the Rockers and those type of groups where I would easily put them in one of my top 10 tag teams of all time.
I got to tell you, I agree. I'm not a list maker kind of guy because I change my mind about shit all the time.
Right.
But based, if we're going to be scientific about this, based on what we've seen here, there hasn't been one, or that was pretty good performance by them as a team. Everything has been fucking awesome.
Yeah.
So that I'm inclined to think they were this good all the time. And that's why they had the rep. They had the rep.
Yep.
You know, and we'd always read about it. It was.
And the thing is, they always worked in a small territory in the Southwest. But now, watching the Houston, which is, you know, Houston's big time. It's a big territory, but it's a big, it's important territory where they're drawing money in Houston for them. And
big time.
Bob Bosch, they worked on top in Houston quite a bit, or the semi-main event a lot.
At some point, it was another just compliment. I'm just like, we've seen Tully be in a lot of good tag teams over the years.
Yeah, Arn and
between him and Arn, and well, no, how many we've seen actually?
Him and
Arn,
too.
Yeah. And, okay, so let me strike that point. But they're just young and cocky and obnoxious, and I love everything about them.
I think Gino's better than Tully at this point in his career.
I would say it's now I remember my actual point that I wanted to make. The whole how good these guys were as a team was almost one of those wrestling myths, because they're like, well, there's no way we're ever going to know. The footage isn't out there. It was almost like a version of like the last Battle of Atlanta or something. That's not what we're going to say. But hey, look, we've seen that. And now look at what we're getting. All these matches confirming, all that hype you used to read about, and Meltzer would say, people said they were great or they were great. It's true.
Yeah.
And they're fucking awesome. I could watch these guys as a tag team nonstop.
Yeah, they're very, very Midnight Express-esque, aren't they? Except they don't have a slashy of offense.
But they've got their own...
They have their own swagger to them, obviously.
Because the Midnights were awesome, but they didn't emote. You know, that's what Cornette was for. These guys are, I mean, Gino has charisma to spare.
Yeah, both guys are heat magnets. I mean,
Heat magnets. It's funny to see Tully Blanchard in a ring with a guy who's getting more heat than he is.
Yeah.
I mean, I just remember Tully used in Crockett. Even in Philly, Tully got booed.
I ran into him at an indie show recently, a couple of months back. And he still has a swagger of a heel. I mean, he's a natural heel. There's just certain guys who, he was really nice and cordial outside the ring. Don't get me wrong. But he had a chip on his shoulder. I mean, it's just something you can't teach. It was there, you know?
Well, it's so funny because I've seen footage of him. He's born again.
Yeah.
But I see he goes into fucking prisons. Okay, and preaches to prisoners and shit. And so I'm like, you know, good for you. But when I see it, I'm like, I know it's real and I know he's sincere. But in my mind, I was like, that's fucking Tully Blanchard.
Yeah.
You know, he's got, what's the angle?
Yeah.
Because he's such a heel.
Yeah, it's like there's certain things people, you're like, you're just taking a back at on when there's, like, that is one of them. I remember watching a shoot interview with Ricky Steamboat, and I've been mentioning how he sometimes took some speed to get going in the morning, and I was like, whoa, what? You know, just because he's the ultimate baby face, and you're just shocked. Hey, I couldn't wrap my brain around it.
But it's killing you now. I mean, you're like, no, not Ricky.
Yeah, I'm still fighting. I'm just on the aftermath of my bubonic plague. I like this match, too. Now, we have another one, which I slotted in the main event of the duo versus JYD and Tiger Conway Jr. Matt D liked this match better than that one. I think Matt's nuts, actually.
So invitation redacted.
This is a good match. Don't get me wrong, and I liked it. This is the one I was really actually looking forward to the most. But we'll get to the main event in a bit. But I really liked this. I mean, we get two refs for this match. I thought that was kind of cool. On paper, this looks like it's going to be an incredible match, and it is a really strong match. Manny and Gino start off, and Gino eats a couple of arm drags, and I was loving Bosch explaining how Gino is like a master of using the ropes to escape, and he's like the rope master, which I kind of dug. And I like Manny, and this is all Manny early, and Gino and Tully are just stooging and bumping like mofos for him. You tag in the mill, and Gino tags the Tully, and the pace gets a little bit more deliberate, but the duo is still shining up the faces, and Gino is like trying to avoid Mill because they're having like a little feud. Finally, they lock up, and the heels trick Mill, and they start getting a little heat on him. And Gino's like celebrating like he's a member of the New England Patriots and just going nuts, you know, going up and down the sideline like he's scoring the winning touchdown. And then Mill gets a hot tag to Manny, and Manny's on fire. And then we get a double team, another double team, sets up another heat segment. And I always like that. I like how the duo uses the numbers game to set up the heat, or they cheat to set up the heat. We don't see that. I mean, it's just something that's kind of like a lost art in a lot of wrestling nowadays. It's like when you're a heel, yeah, you should cheat to win, or you should cheat to get the heat. You shouldn't do it fairly. That's why if not, you're not a heel. And I like the heels wearing. I mean, I know a lot of it's like some of it's because of what they want in wrestling nowadays. So I mean, I shouldn't be comparing it.
It is funny because I've read there's been times in WWF where I've heard the complaint is like even when a heel or often not there's so much, but they're like, why is it that a heel always has to cheat to win? You know, that used to be a criticism I'd read. Like, you know, why did he have to grab the ropes? You know, why can't he just win clean? Used to be something people complained about, like within a part of smart circles, and I never understood it.
Yeah, because like, that's their heat. They're about heat. They're supposed to get heat. You're supposed to boo them. If they win, they win with a comeback. You're Tom Brady. He's not a heel. He's a babyface.
Yeah, there's that, and then there's even the kayfabe reason. If you're just like, okay, you know, he's at this point in his career where he doesn't want to do it the hard way. He's going to take shortcuts, and he doesn't care if people think about it anymore, because apparently you can get away with shortcuts in this business.
Yeah, and I can live with a heel who goes over clean if, like, his character is, I'm the best, you know? He's Apollo Creed or something, you know?
You know what it is? Again, I think we grew up with jobber matches.
Yeah.
You have plenty of jobber matches so where the heels can win clean.
Yep.
You know,
yeah.
So we saw them win clean all the time, but it was always against, you know, fucking Rusty Brooks or George Scott. Yeah,
George South.
Exactly.
George South. I meant. I'm sorry.
George South. I'm sorry. George South.
And then we get a belly to belly from Manny, which sets up the hot tag, but the duo crotch Mill and they pin him. I thought it was like a nice 3.5-star match. Really good stuff. And I kind of liked the Mill promo because you don't see wrestlers crying too often. And it was passionate where he wants his revenge. Because I don't know Spanish, so I'm thinking, oh, this is him just wanting a rematch and he's begging Paul for it. So that's how I kind of viewed
it. Here's what I picked up from it. Apparently, I'm figuring he must have promised a little boy in the hospital who just needed to know if that Mill would win, and that'll help him get through his operation.
Little Alberto.
Yeah. And I look him down and he's dead. This guy, Mr. Bosch, is dead. That's the only acceptable reason for... you're Mill Mascaris. You're supposed to be the greatest of all time. What are you crying for?
Can you imagine Manny Fernandez tagging with a crybaby?
Crybaby. Manny Fernandez could come over and slap the shit off. He's like,
that promo could have turned Manny heel right then and there, and he could have gone out and slapped and beat the crap out of him.
Now I'm fantasy booking that in the future. He's like, I don't tag with no crybabies, man. It wouldn't last a minute in the NOM. But I was going to mention one thing, and I made a note of this. Everyone always goes on about like Monsoon. I've always said this about two referees in these tag team matches. And then I was watching this at one point, and I'm going, that must be fucking hard for two referees to be moving around, because you can't be staying in one spot for too long. You got to move around. You got to move around while also not really be affecting anything
and
with the
coordinating
action.
With the other ref. So you guys can't be both in the same spot, or both going down, or doing the same bump, or what, you know? Yeah.
Or just even trying to move from spot to spot, or what to do. And I'm like, that's why they don't do it. It's got to be fucking impossible. And I became fixated on that at one point, going, I mean, they're doing a good job here, but God, that must be fucking a pain in the ass as a referee. You want us to do what? Come on.
Right. Oh, man. All right, man. I had this moment. Why don't we take a break before we go and talk about the main event? And we'll be right back.
The PWO-PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only. So it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
And folks, we are back. And before we go into the main event, I want to do a little special shout out to Dean Knickerbocker. He had dropped the service, but he heard our talk about Harley Race Terry Funk title match, and he re-upped. Dean, if you're listening to the show, man, tweet me. Tell me if you liked it or not. If we oversold it for you or what. But man, the people giving it reviews have I loved it. I know Matt D loved it. Phil,
I loved it.
Johnny loved it. Phil and Eric. Phil and Eric Ritz over at Segundo Caída did a review, and both loved it. I think Phil was in my boat, where we both thought it was like the greatest version of an NWA title defense of all time. So Dean, why don't you tweet me? Tell me if you liked it. I know you watched it. I know you're about to watch it, because I saw the screen grab on Twitter. If you're listening, throw me a line. Tell me if you liked it or not, brother.
Yeah, all right, man. Awesome. Cool.
Yeah, main event time.
Yeah.
Dynamic Duo versus JYD, Tiger Conway Jr., September 25th, 1981. And of two things that was pretty interesting here is, one, Paul Bosch refers to Tiger and JYD as the Soul Patrol.
The Soul Patrol. God,
which I
that was
thought
awesome.
Was cool. And wasn't that Atlas and Rocky Johnson's name?
It was, but I would venture a guess that there were lots of short-term tag teams between two black guys in that day who got billed as the Soul Patrol for a night or two.
Good point.
I'm pretty sure. Because here's the thing. They did not call them Atlas and Johnson the Soul Patrol on television. They were introduced as the Soul Patrol. They were never called the Soul. I don't remember. I think maybe hearing Monsoon say it once, and it's sort of a thing that fans came up with more than what they actually said on television. So to hear Paul Bosch actually say it, I was like, oh. And it sounded, and he was so good when, because he loves it. He thinks this is the greatest thing. He's like, this is fun. The music's fun. I love these guys. And his enthusiasm is off the chart.
Yeah, now this card, this is not even the main event. This is a mid-card match. It was the fourth match. And this wasn't how it was in New York, where the main event did go on last. In New York, a lot of times the main event went in the middle of the thing. But here, 99% of the time, the main event was the main event. Here the opening match was Tank Patton versus Dr. Tom Pritchard. That sounds could be fun. Mm-hmm. Then we got Buck Robley versus Bobby Duncombe, another fun one. Then we got JYD versus Gino Hernandez. So somehow that must have set up the tag match here, which was Tiger and JYD versus the duo. So I'm hoping we get that Dog and Gino set up, because I'm sure this sets it up somehow. We got Brass Knucks title of Ken Patera versus Manny Fernandez. That on paper sounds great.
That sounds fucking awesome.
Yeah. And that's two guys I've never seen work each other, so I'm dying to see it.
The Brass Knucks aside, we know that means anything fucking goes. So it's basically, is it anything goes match? Again, between two guys we've never seen wrestle, and I defy you to think you ever thought about it.
Yep, and both of them in 1981 are, and they're like, ugh. This is Ken Patera's year. 81 right. This is his big year, big yeah. run. And Manny was already seen. He's already great. Other match, Wahoo versus Dick Slater for the Southwest Heavyweight title, which sounds freaking phenomenal, just amazing. and Bockwinkle versus Brody for the AWA World Heavyweight title. So nice. loaded show. Hope we get a few of these matches. But the one we got, I thought was killer. What you make of this thing, man? I absolutely love this match.
I adored this. As a matter of fact, when I was watching it, it's been unseasonably warm here, and I was on the back deck watching everything, enjoying the evening weather, taking my notes. It got dark, but I was like, so I'm just scratching stuff on the side because A, couldn't see what I was doing, and B, I was like, I'm not writing shit down. This is so good. I want to watch this. And Paul loves it. I loved it. When Tully is wrestling Tiger, and he ends up getting thrown into the corner where the Dog is. The Dog just rears his fist back, and Tully bumps away from that like he is scared shitless.
Yep.
And he bounces, though. He bounces into a crawl backward, and it's tremendous.
Or he actually pinballs.
Yeah, he everyone says, oh, they're pinballing around. He literally is fucking pinballing. But while doing that impressive bump, his facial expressions, what he's doing with his hands, is conveying total fear. And I was like, that's it. You know, the bump is fine, but you got to do it with that level of commitment to the acting of this job. And boy, was it. He's so goddamn good. excuse me. And speaking of so goddamn good, we've seen the Tiger Conway Jr. on this footage so far. We're like, you know what? He's pretty good.
Good babyface.
He's pretty good. This is the best Tiger Conway Jr. match we've seen so far, I think.
I don't know about that, but I will say one thing. I will say this is, I felt this is Tiger showed them his most charisma here.
Oh, complete. Well, to me, okay, that's all the same thing. And granted, I haven't seen everything on. You know, I only started watching everything since we started doing this show. The way we're doing it now. And so maybe I missed something, but here he is lean and mean and fired up, and you can tell that he's super excited to be teaming with the fucking Junkyard Dog, you know, who's a big star.
I will say, though, Conway has really impressed me as being a really underrated tag worker, where we've seen him with JYD here. We've seen him team with Jose Lothario and have a great match. We've seen him team with Ricky Morton and have a great match. I mean, sure, these guys are great workers. He's tagging, like, don't get me wrong. But yeah, I think the guy's he's been an underrated worker, because no one would ever talk about him being a great worker. I mean, he's definitely a hidden gem of the Houston footage.
Well, it's like we said, he was like always that one guy that would be in that PWI thing about the Young Lions of Wrestling that everyone would be like, who?
Yeah.
You know, because there was no one saw that. The magazine always throw him in there. But here, that's exactly what he is. This is, I'm like, oh, this is that Young Lion wrestling. I mean, he is a jacked up, fantastic fucking Dwayne from What's Happening. You know?
Who was your favorite on What's Happening? I gotta know.
Dwayne, motherfucker, of course.
Who was Dwayne? Yeah, Dwayne was mine. I hated Rerun.
Rerun was a fucking big dummy. Rerun stunk.
And Raj was like the uncoolest guy of all time. Dwayne, you believed could get laid and stuff.
That wasn't even that. I'm just like, who am I happy to fucking see here? Because the sister's a pain in the ass.
Yep.
The waist is annoying. I liked Mama.
Mama's terrifying, though.
Well, I liked Mama, but they wrote her off the fucking show. And I'm like, who do I love every time he pops into the screen? Fucking Dwayne going, hi, how's it going? Damn, that's cool.
With his basketball.
Yeah, it was basketball and shit, man. He was awesome. And trust me, when I made the comparison here, it wasn't just because he looked a little like him. I'm like, that's right. Fucking Dwayne's cool, and Tiger is cool here. Then we get the line of the century from Mr. Bosch, because Nick Bockwinkel comes out at the end of this match. Because apparently, earlier in the evening, JYD hit him in the head with his music machine. The music machine of the Junkyard Dog. I'm like, music? The boombox? It must be what he's talking about. But he comes out, and he flips JYD off the apron, so he falls down, hits his head, and gets busted open. Paul Bosch says, he just jerked the dog off. Oh, I died. I'm like, someone needs to fucking make a drop of that.
No doubt, right?
And we're not the type of show that uses drops, but you send us that fucking drop, it'll get played at least once.
It will. Every time Johnny throws a shitty joke, we'll do that one.
Oh, yeah, okay. About two a show? And JYD, though, yeah, he's all groggy on the outside, and he isn't there to make the tag for Tiger, and now the heels are swarming on fucking Tiger. Boom, 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 boom. And when he gets the tag, and the dog isn't really ready to be tagged in. He's still woozy. But now he's the legal man, so I don't remember if it was Gino or Tully, who comes over and just starts punching him in the head.
Yep.
And all that did was wake up the dog. And now you've pissed off a bloody Junkyard Dog. And they're like, whoa, 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 whoa. And I'm just like, I'm cheering for the heels. I'm cheering for Junkyard Dog. I'm cheering for everyone in this match. This is so good. JYD is pissed off. And then he goes off on the fucking bad guys. And this is tremendous. I love this match.
I'm with you, man. I love Conway Jr. dancing to Another One Bites the Dust early on, and Paul Bosch calling him the Soul Patrol, and Johnny just pinballing early for the faces, and we get some great stooging from the heels. Like, the last match felt like it was a Gino performance. Here it felt like, okay, Tully's the leader, you know? He's going to be the big asshole in this match, and...
I think maybe they take turns, you know, because they're like, okay, last month I was the big month I was the big asshole.
Yeah, last month I got my tire slashed. This month you're gonna get your tire slashed. You know? Your turn.
I'd imagine they ride together. So.
Oh man, and JYD is in, and he's dominating Gino and Tully, so cool. and Gino's working over JYD now because they cheat, and Tully now is working over the dog. They're using quick tags to get heat, and. Tiger gets tagged back in, and he's beating on the duo, and they do these really cool boxing spots, which I loved, and I thought Gino was tremendous showing ass here, and they finally cut off Tiger. He's facing peril now, and the duo is in and out with tag, just, you know, big, just drop, you know, just cheating and doing little quick little moves, just nothing fancy, but enough to keep the action going and getting the crowd hot. We get this big drop kick by Gino, which I kind of like every now and then, like a heel to do like a really cool like drop kick, you know, of the show every now and then. He does have some skill, and Tiger's taking a beating, and now it's Tully's turn. He starts wearing down Tiger, some more down. A hot tag the refs don't see. I love that spot. Instant heat, crowd is pissed. Bach is out and pulls JYD off the apron, and the crowd is like nuclear right now, and I love that. I love he bloodies up JYD, so it also adds juice to this match, and it also adds more heat to the Bach JYD feud. Tully with a pile driver, JYD is bleeding, Tigers fighting to get to JYD, and this is a great heat segment because they've pulled like every heel trick in the book here. They cut him off. They've knocked JYD off the apron. It's great heat. Tagged to JYD, and he's pissed, and the crowd is with him. He's not, you know, he's not fired up, JYD. He's like, I've been taking a beating, but I'm going to whip your ass, boy. And a big thump gets T1 Tully. And you know what? I thought that might have been the finish, and they kind of blew it, but I'm not sure.
Then they it sort of went that way, too, but the cover was awesome.
Yeah, because they go right to a double noggin knocker for the three. Yeah. And then we get Box back out, and we get this great heated post-match. I thought this was a four-star match. The angle with JYD really added some juice to the match, and I thought all four guys were perfect in the role here. I mean, this was just a great Southern tag where the heels looking great heel work, great babyface work from both guys, and just sets up a lot of stuff. Yeah. Just tremendous work all around, man.
Yeah. And before we wrap up, I just want to mention Bach here, and something just occurred to me because I'd written down, after he does this to the dog, he goes over to the microphone and grabs it to Mr. Bosch. And I said, I told him he had to pay the price. And that was it. And you're like, oh, so, and he explained what happened. So it got me thinking, I'm like, because you'd have these things in territories where Bach would tour, Memphis with Lawler, and apparently here, where instead of like, okay, you're going to get the champion for like three shows, yep, let's say. And, you could easily be uncreative with why the momentum, the storytelling of the three, based on just it's the champ. Bockwinkel with Lawler, suddenly there's all the, you know, that you can't punch, you know, and that shit. And here's like, there seems like a little extra effort to get over this JYD Bockwinkel feud I've never heard of. And instead of just real simple, I'm like, oh, Bach comes out in the main event of this match with the local guys. And like, I would imagine, I'll give credit to A. Paul Bosch, who is a booking genius, but I bet you Bach is a little bit like, I've got a little idea. Why don't we do this? You know, because he's really good at that shit. And I love that. I was like, I see Nick Bach go walk in. I'm like, where the fuck Bach?
What a natural charisma. I would love to see a six-man tag with Bach and the duo.
Oh, good Lord. Please.
That's like Horseman level of greatness right there. You know, that'd be like the Horseman in like Earth 2 Flash.
Yeah. I would watch that with my pants off.
Oh, yeah. Give those two and then give them Jose Lothario as the third babyface. Oh, good God.
Give me those three against Jimmy Valiant, Bugsy McGraw, and fucking whoever. I don't give a shit because you know that on the heel side, it's going to be just an amazing performance no matter who they're in there with.
Oh, yeah. One thing I forgot to mention is the Ivan Koloff promo, and he mentions Jose Lothario. I need a Jose Lothario, Ivan Koloff match. I think that'd be phenomenal. Man, do you have anything else you want to add to the show, brother?
I just want to say to those of you who were fans, listened to us as when we were doing Titans of Wrestling show, Parv put out a musical retrospective, best of, that's out there on the feed that really check it out because he put in a lot of work that I didn't think he was going to do, that he didn't need to do. And it's pretty fucking tremendous. And I wanted to give him a shout out. I bust his balls all the time, but this is pretty extraordinary. And I wanted to say thank you to him. And I think the last one's dropping on Wednesday, possibly.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. So, I mean, it felt like when we recorded it was a home run of a show. So, man,
I agree.
Check it out, folks. And again, man, this is NWAOnDemand.com. Get your first week free. Tubio app. If you want to watch it on your Roku, Tubio, to your iPhone or your Android, launch it. You can watch it on your Roku. Awesome stuff, man. Johnny, of course, it's been a pleasure.
Yep, as always.
Everyone, have a great week watching wrestling.
He came from Texas seeking fortune and fame. Rose pretty quickly to the top of the game. Defender of the downtrodden. King of the hill. Tag team champion with Al Madrill. Before a black and white TV. the middle of the night. I'm lying on the floor, I'm bathed in blue light. The telecast's in Spanish, I can understand some, and I need justice in my life. Here it comes, look high.